SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Not to start off on a belaboring personal note, I'm playing catch-up and then some. I don't even know if I even broached this topic, but over Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, this will teach me. It didn't occur at the time, but I had kind of noticed I had maybe bit down funny on something. So I had a tooth. I had a tooth that was kind of bothering me off and on. And Tina did the Tina thing and, you know, was giving me all kinds of advice, but there was never any swelling or any this or any, you know, no one didn't feel like there was an infection. And then if I bit down, I get like little tweak, like what the hell's going on? So 2 days ago, I was having lunch and I bit and I was like, oof, this thing hurts more. So I did the responsible thing. I went, I called, you know, I'm not a guy that's afraid of the dentist, but, I go when there's something to, you know, go for. I've never had any, you know, the last issue I had with my teeth, I think I had my wisdom teeth out when I was in high school. So I make an appointment right here locally in Greenwich, and the guy, you know, they take x-rays. This guy sees it, senses it. Says, you've got to go to the root canal specialists. Okay. And then down. So I go, so $150 for the first go around. And now I've got to, they somehow get me in. Actually, I was lucky. They get me in down in Clifton Park. I got to go schlep down there. And my whole the afternoon is already, you know, the afternoon is gone. And, so now I'm down there for 4 o'clock and she shrugs her shoulders at me. It says, well, you need an implant. What do you mean? What's that? What are you talking about? Oh, this is cracked. This tooth is cracked. I said, wait a minute. Is some Bondo or something in there? No. Okay. So now what? Well, oral surgery. I'm like, what are you talking about, oral surgery? So this thing, I'm now my head's spinning. I'm like, I'm leaving for Vegas for NHC. She goes, oh, don't worry about that. This will take 6 months. So 6 months? What are you talking about? Well, we take the tooth out and then we pack in some cement. Okay. Then you wait 90 days. 90 days. And what goes on? And what? I look like little Abner for that period? Well, we can put a little something. Well, they'll give you a little something in there to, you know, to fool your friends. What? Okay. What happens after 90 days? Oh, well, then you come back in and they're going to do this and they're going to put a thing in and then you wait another 90 days. Okay, when do I get a replacement tooth? So I'm beside myself and not only beside myself, I'm out $550 and nothing is resolved. They gave me a nice flash drive. This was great. When they were going to take the, this is tremendous. At the, I'll put a picture of this up. It's downstairs. They hand me a lip balm. It says, "Oh, you can balm your, you know, lip. It'll be more comfortable when we take the photo, the X-ray. If you balm your, you know, put lip balm on." So, for $398, it's the most expensive lip balm in retail sales history. I got a $400 lip balm and a flash drive of the picture of the crack tooth. It's unbelievable. Not happy. So that's my tale of woe, and how, and also an explanation for why I'm a little behind on the handicapping for the weekend. I'm going to have to do most of it later today because if I chew every so often, I chew. It's obviously not something you can live with, especially now, you know, knowing now that it's cracked, and. You know, this is. I tell you what, there's actually, you know, there's. How can I tie it into equine life? Well, there was like probably a fissure. I said, "How did this happen?" She goes, "It was probably a, you know, a little fissure." And I can tell you what I bit on. It was a Jordan almond. A Jordan almond had a bag of holiday, you know, red, yellow, red, white, and green Jordan almonds. That's what it went. Tina said to me the next day, she goes, "Did you have one of those almonds?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "They're really hard." I said, "You know what? You're right. It was hard." That's what it was. So some real learning here. But, you know, that the little fissure and then it probably biting on that almond probably forced it. And then the third incident was the day before yesterday when I probably bit again. And that was it. The baby, the thing. It's pretty wild, actually. You can see a line. I mean, it's distinct. Crazy. So that was my day, my afternoon yesterday. I love sharing these things with you because, new experiences, whether it's almost losing sight in an eye, heart attack, now a lost tooth. Tina actually had one go wrong on her. We were on our way to Florida, and like literally the morning of her flight, she had a tooth. That just occurred to me that she had the same thing happen in an untimely basis. Okay. So now that you're all up to speed, it should be a great weekend. We've got really. The more I looked and the more PPs I printed, the more interesting it got. And, you know, there isn't any big, you know, special racing per se, but there is the Pasco and the Gasparilla at Tampa. Marcus Hirsch will be by, and Marcus made the Gasparilla, I think, was one of his three. You know, he does the game plan analysis and... So Marcus is going to come by. Yeah, he looked at the fifth season, the California Cup, Oaks. Jay Priv will be by at top of hour two. He looked at the Cal Cup Derby, so we'll get the three-year-old races as part of the Cal Cup. They are forcing out the Rainbow at Santa Anita tomorrow, assuming it doesn't get it today. We're it's deja vu all over again. Nobody goes to that restaurant anymore. It's too busy. How many yogiisms can we fit in today? Speaking of hits at the Rainbow variety, yesterday, and I woke up this morning, and as I was perusing the internet and Twitter. 1 minute to post, and I should know his name, but I don't. And he popped the Rainbow yesterday with $194 ticket, $194.40. Had a very clever ticket. to hit that Rainbow Six yesterday, 121,222. And it reminded me of our late friend, Chet Hancock, Chester Arthur Hancock, that Johnny introduced me to, that was a listener, and we had too short of a time because Chet was struck down by a heart attack himself. And Chet would play the Rainbow for action. I mean, he and actually $200 ticket like this was not unusual. He had a couple of friends, and they would each put in, you know, $50 to $100 a day, and they were just playing. You know, they weren't necessarily playing to hit the jackpot. They were playing. We discussed this at length at the time. You'll recall, and there's plenty of people that do this and are quite happy to hit for, you know, $1,200, $1,500, $3,000. You know, some of the days where it carries, obviously, but it you know, comes back with a, you know, with decent returns. And I'm not sure if 1 minute to post, if he, you know, does it like this on a daily basis, but a tremendous hit. And he went 1 by 3 by 3. He hit the all button in the fourth leg, and that's where the key was, because the longest shot on the board won 25-1. That was the key. Then 2 deep in that fifth, and then he went 6 deep in the nightcap, which was won, by the way. I forgot to put this up on Twitter because I was still doing, you know, I was still doing tooth stuff. But Trombetta's nightcap horse that he talked about with us on Tuesday won that nightcap and was a decent, I think it was maybe an $8 horse. What was it, Quality Control? Yeah, Quality Control. Yeah, 860. So congratulations to 1 minute to post. He, you know what's interesting? He singled War of Ages in the first leg in a maiden claimer going 5.5 on Tapita, and that horse was the fourth choice. And I think was even, you know, like 9-2. Yeah, 9-2 morning line. He singled in that first leg, which was a pretty daring start on a Tapita, you know, low-level maiden claimer. And he got the win. Leon McCanus sent out War of Ages, Poseidon's Warrior Filly, and she wins and pays $1,360. So a first leg single that pays $1,360, and that undoubtedly knocked a few people out. Then 3 deep to get Crumb Bun, the Delgado, the George Delgado, a Fleet Alex mare with Chantal. Then Paco again. Paco had a pretty big day yesterday, I think. I think he won 3 or 4. And that was a nice price, too, $11.20. Fourth choice there. So, you know, every time you get a third, fourth choice, you're knocking out people. And then here's the 26-1 winner for Amador Sanchez with Hector Berrios, the longest shot on the board, where he went all and 9-1. And frankly, it I don't know if it would have been a single ticket winner, but the second place finisher, the runner up, was 9-1. Third place finisher was 6-1. So, I mean, the two favorites finished fourth and fifth. So it was a very clever gambit to punch the all button there. The 70-cent Mezcal, a winner for Pletcher and Bobby Flay. This, the 4-year-old filly out of Catherine Sophia, for Bobby. And then the nightcap winner, second choice, Trombetta with the Quality Road Filly we talked about, for Mrs. Weber, Quality Control, 860. So $121,000. Very nice. So congratulations. And I exchanged a bon mot with him. Yesterday, by the way, speaking of nice priced winners, how about the visit by Jessica Paquette to help you with Sam Houston This one I did manage to tweet out last night because we were on top of that race by that time, which came about 7 o'clock last night. And that Texas Ascot Queen, yes, Lucky, how are you? 9-1. That was a tremendous job by Jessica. This was the J.R. Caldwell Indigo Racing claimer in that seventh race, the horse on the outside that she specifically, I mean, absolutely stressed. Coming back, this was the one that hadn't been seen since last July. Lane Leslie had a nice night at Sam Houston. And that you know, it was interesting. The filly that I said was going to be tough and was a clear second, Lily's Business, 2-1 morning line, but completely ignored on the board. Went off at 11-1. It was very strange. That was the Ronnie Cravens filly. So the exacta for a buck came back 53. $2 exacta, 106. But a $20.40 winner for Jessica's push. That Durango Jess of Tom Durant and Brett Calhoun beat the Asmussen Firster in that maiden special ninth as well. Durango Jess and paid $10. And actually, I should mention, the eighth race was interesting. Timed event that I was kind of curious about, that J.R. Caldwell was willing to dangle this colt. This one was the one with the crazy Texas breeding we talked about, Ride the Times. Horse wins with Little Luz and went unclaimed. So breaks the maiden and paid $13. So it was good yesterday. It's good racing at Sam Houston. Today's card is okay. Just okay. Tomorrow night. Tomorrow looked a little. Saturday looked better than today. Let me give you a quick lineup. And in fact, Case, let's reach for Scott Shapiro. Here it is. We got Shap in here. Look at some Oaklawn action. And Joel Rosario back in the irons today. You're going to see Joel six times, assuming none scratch out. He's got calls in the first, fourth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth. Every single mount, a Steve Asmussen trainee. Interesting and notable. So Joel back in action today, and the presumptive Eclipse Award-winning rider based on the Eclipse reveals thus far. So Scott is going to join us. We'll get some football plays from Scott as well. Wild Card Weekend. Marcus Hirsch for game plan and anything else Marcus has gotten. Of course, some news yesterday. Mystic Guide trying to return, but now in limbo. Ill-timed hiccup. We'll get details from Marcus. Jay Privman is mentioned. Priv's going to talk Eclipse with you as well. And we'll get more West Coast news. And there's been, frankly, more hard news than there's been racing news. So we'll talk to Jay. James Scully is back after taking last week off. Scully, some plays from James as well as some sports action. Mike Welsh will go to Gulfstream. Catch up with Mike Hammer at Oaklawn and Rich Eng. I promised that we'd get back to Rich Eng, and Rich will help us. I think hopefully he's got some answers for tomorrow at Santa Anita, given the force out of the rainbow. So lots to do, a lot of handicapping, and we'll slip in anything else along the way. Touch on the sale at some point as well. Last day today. And that Eclipse reveal tomorrow, 11 a.m. on TVG. Scott Shapiro, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you, sir?
I am well and looking forward to the weekend. And it's, you know, get the NFL action involved, and kind of nice. Got a hat full of games, and we got racing that'll be woven in between and around.
Yeah, always a fun time of year. You know, I always start to think how much I'm going to miss football when it's over, and, you know, the playoffs kind of signify that. But, man, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Pretty wide open compared to normal. I think the NFC may be a little more entertaining throughout than the AFC. But, and then, as you mentioned in the intro, plenty of good racing. No, you know, star-studded cards, if you will, but a lot of good wagering opportunities, of course, out west, and always in Oakland as well.
Well, don't know where you want to start or if you want to do any review from last week. You had that Alexandros last week that started things off pretty well.
Yeah, that was about the only thing that went well over those 2 days. I mean, Oakland, super challenging, I thought, and it looks like it's going to be challenging again. That Alexandros is just a class horse. We ended up, I think, only getting 2-1, but didn't end up making it a profitable, you know, number of plays on the show, but hopefully we can redeem ourselves a little bit, and it looks like today the weather should be good in Hot Springs. Tomorrow, again, it seems like we can't get through a Saturday without some precipitation, but hopefully it doesn't get in the way too much.
Well, tomorrow, the fifth season, as it happens, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I saw quite distinctly that today's action, and particularly the late pick four at Oaklawn, there was I had a little preference, I think, for today as opposed to tomorrow. There is that, I would say, the double tomorrow involving the stake. There's a maiden race and then the stake as the 7th and 8th. But today, the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, that's a very nice sequence.
It sure is. I think, you know, if you're a horizontal player that likes to shoot for some big scores, I thought today from start to finish looked like a pretty challenging card where spreading in many of the races, if not all of them, made some sense. I guess we can dive into that, the latter part of today's card. As you mentioned, the pick four starts in the 6th with the three-year-old race at a mile, first-level allowance event where, on paper, it looks like a two-horse race. Chasing Time is pretty interesting to me. This is a horse that took on winners for the first time last time out for Steve Asmussen and my racehorse, Sable, and disappointed in the mud, but that was chasing a pretty quick pace at one turn, and I think the pedigree, you know, should work fine for this one, stretching out to two turns, but not overly creative in there. That one's listed as a 3-1 morning line favorite, while Wicked Genius, who broke the maiden here at Churchill at 150,000 and then ran pretty good losing to Homebrew last time, is 5-2, but that might reverse. Chasing Time might go off the favorite. I could see, if you need to plant a flag here, maybe Chasing Time being a potential single. I don't fully trust, but I think this horse is probably supposed to beat this field if he takes to the mile, to the two turns.
Yeah, those are the two. They you know, there's a couple of decent alternatives, I suppose, Charter Rogue and so forth. But no, I agree. And for those that want to, you know, try to make sure to start the pick four, I think you probably use both. But if you're on the shoestring, I hear you. You do get Rosario, and there's no better angle in all of racing than Jock's coming back from time away. the first day back, that's a classic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm you know, definitely excited to see Joel in Hot Springs. Certainly going to take a lot of the big mounts from some other riders. Specifically, I would think definitely for Steve and probably for Brad. If you're looking for a kind of a wild card to throw in there, the other McPeak has Wicked Genius. He also has Fort Defiance, who's the 8-horse, 12-1 on the line. May just be an all-weather horse, may not be that good, but did really wake up last time. Big move forward. You could argue it was the synthetic. You could also make the case, though, if you're looking to include, that it was to stretch out to two turns. So I thought a little bit interesting if you're looking to include a price.
All right. What are you doing with the maidens?
I landed on number 9, Ain't Broke here. There's several ways to go. I just don't think we've seen the best of this daughter of Dialed In yet. I mean, she's gotten hammered in both career starts. The first one was on Halloween, which is the finale on the Stars of Tomorrow. One card at Churchill, and she was heavy steam that day, went off at 3-1 in a race that ended up being very live. Marissa's Lady is a very nice Billy Morey horse that won that race. Promises to Dance ended up coming back and winning at odds on to kick off that closing day, Derby City 6. Wasn't comfortable that day and just wasn't comfortable into the first turn, stretching out to two turns last time on November 27th, which was the Stars of Tomorrow 2 card. Been freshened up, blinkers go on, you get LASIK now for the first time. I just think, I don't know if we'll get 8-1 because the horse has been well backed at the windows, but in a pretty challenging race, I thought Ain't Broke was pretty interesting.
There's a little, you know, a few pedigree notes to mention, and certainly Princess Pauline, 7-2. Here's Asmussen and Rosario again. 3-year-old debut for this Curlin filly out of Keen Pauline, who was a stake filly herself, and Stone Street, of course. This is a serious pedigree. She gets first LASIK, as does Swap Shop on the rail with Canonias, and here's Larry Jones and a sibling. This is actually an interesting filly, and that 4-1 seemed like a very aggressive number on the morning line as second choice, and I was surprised, actually, to see that number so low. This is a half to Dean Martini that people will certainly remember. Right. I think Ohio Derby winner?
Ohio Derby winner for Tom Amos, yeah.
Correct. Yep. And so that caught my eye. And that's a filly that's making very slow, deliberate, steady progress and is another first LASIK candidate, as it were. You've got Run the Tap for McPeak. This is a gun runner out of High Tap, who herself, the Tappet mare, was terrific and precocious, both short and long, and is a sibling of Halliday. So there's plenty to look at. First-time 3-year-old for Sweet Beauty, making a second start for Brad Cox, the McLean's Music. Nothing wrong with your tab of Ain't Broke either. There's a lot going on. Ice Orchid for John Ortiz, second start and a good debut at the opening weekend. There's a number of candidates in here. This is a terrific group.
It's a fun race, and I agree with you. I was surprised Swap Shop was 4-1. She's coming out of a $50,000 maiden claimer, two back, and then one of those restricted, auction-restricted races last time, and she got blinkers that day and ran off on Martin Garcia. So we'll see if second-time blinkers freshened up, you know, if she can relax a little better, but you would have to think the plan would be to send from the inside. And, yeah, Ice Orchid would be a horse I would definitely include. I picked that one for second on Twin Spires.
Oh, and Bentley Combs also... start table for John Penn, a homebred, made progress in that second start in November, and comes out of...
Yeah, Edley came back to win yesterday, too, the horse that beat Star Table.
Well, and Ice Baby, who was behind them, a winner, too, as a next out. So you get Arietta, the leading rider. There's a lot to like about that, and this is why this sequence is so much fun today. You then get to the money allowance, $101,000 3/4 for 4 and ups, and oh, let's see, here's CZ Rocket as well as Casadero and Mojo Man. Again, this could be a stake. I mean, anywhere else, this is for six figures, and with those horses, this is, you know, this could have a name on it.
Without question. And, you know, CZ Rocket, the clear one to beat, hasn't been seen since the, seventh place effort in the Breeders' Cup sprint back, of course, at Del Mar in late November, but wasn't expected to run all that well that day. Didn't come in his best form. But what's most notable is he's had success over this track, but he gets LASIK back, which he wasn't able to run with over those four starts in Southern California. But what was most notable to me was the lack of speed for a race of this nature. There really isn't any true speed horse in here. I mean, you could argue that off the bench, Casadero could be involved early, but it's not as if Joel Rosario necessarily a guy that's going to, you know, known for sending all out. I wanted to make a case that Mojo Man would get an aggressive ride off the layoff for Francisco Arrieta. Not a great gate horse, which is always a concern when you're hoping for that, but does have some races where if he makes the lead, he can get brave. 9-2 for Jimmy DeVito. Four of the wins have come on the all-weather, but three of them have come at Oaklawn Park. So I ended up picking Mojo Man as a lukewarm top pick. I thought Seven Nation Army, maybe another one that could be involved more than many of his races with the lack of early speed. But it was a challenging race. I just wouldn't be in love with anybody other than CZ Rocket that's going to come from too far out of it. But I'd probably go 1-2-4 if I was playing, if I play a pick four.
Well, for those that heard last week when Dash Goff joined us, and Dash has had a busy week at the sale, and Mojo Man came up in that conversation with Dash, and right away he perked right up and he said he's running next week. He's coming back for his 7-year-old debut, and what at least should be noted is that last year at 6 and the year before at 5, with breaks, he was better second off the layoff. And that, I mean, distinctly better second off the layoff. In fact, winning both times second off the layoff. So that's the only proviso. And, DeVito's formulator numbers back that up as well. He's 0 for 14 the last 18 months. Layoff. Yeah. So if it's not today, and Arrieta has won with him. So, Francisco knows, how to approach it. I'm glad you brought up Seven Nation Army, because Moquette, another guy that might, sometimes be looking for something down the road. This might be easing into action. This is a 7-year-old gelding himself, and don't know if the Count Fleet is the intermediate goal, but Seven Nation Army, who debuted last year in the King Cotton, so
right.
This is a good race. Yeah, it's a good race.
Yeah, the lack of pace is what kind of is a bit of an equalizer, because I think CZ Rocket would, with a good setup, is probably supposed to win if he's anywhere near his old self, but I don't know if he's going to get that setup and the inside draw. So, yeah, pretty fun race, but really lack a strong opinion in there.
Well, and then get you to a filly and mare allowance going a mile and a 16th, and this is a well-matched group.
It certainly is, and I think there's a lot of early speed in here signed on, mostly to the outside, but also with Front Street, who stretches out for Asmussen and Rosario again. I went to number one Glamour Girl in here, not normally my kind of horse, 1 for 18 with a lot of seconds and thirds, but it just appears in her second start off the claim for 10 Strike Racing and Lindsay Schultz that she may be in the best form of her career. Could be a little bit of a stretch, but I did think that effort was very encouraging over the surface last time out on December 12th. Was away last early. Doesn't need to be last. Could be, more mid-pack along the inside in this spot, but finished full of run that day, I thought, in a race that was slowing a bit late, but has proven form over this racetrack other than that race. Second start of the form cycle. Florent Giroux stays aboard. So I'm hopeful that Glamour Girl will be coming running late. Probably a horse I'm unwilling to, single or go bet to win aggressively, but a horse that I could definitely see, as a key horse in the exotics, and, whether you like to play in the first or second slots, or, all three slots in the try, or however you'd like to play it. I think she's going to run her race, and I think she should get a pretty good setup in here.
I'll give you a crazy, not that crazy, only 8-1, but going outside, Little King's Princess intrigues me a little bit. John Ortiz, and here's one of those cases where a filly that started her career on the grass, and then he left her on for a maiden try when a route came off the turf at Indiana, and she ran okay, she ran credibly, and so Ortiz left her on the dirt, and she breaks her maiden in her fifth career start. And people are going to look at that allowance try, same exact condition. And she was 20 to 1 plus, and she ran kind of evenly and was wide. And she certainly, you know, Torres, be nice if he could, you know, save some ground somehow. And I don't know, you know, her win came on the front end. So I don't know stylistically how she's supposed to approach this. But I'm a little intrigued by Lil King's Princess, and I don't have any other, you know, clever trumpet Lily, you know, Norm Cash, 4 to 1 seems, you know, I guess that's the right price. This is a horse that won a starter allowance for Cash off the claim. Now tries, you know, deeper water. This is tough. It's a tough sequence.
Very tough. Little King's Princess, you know, you're going to get a better than 8 to 1, I think. You know, you combine the outside draw with, you know, all the things that you mentioned. And that front-running effort was 25-48-3, so the first quarter mile of that race. I would think, like you said, Christian Torres is going to have to figure out a way to angle in and save some ground. I don't know if he has the speed to run with some of these other ones early on, but certainly a horse that seems to be moving in the right direction.
Really fun late pick four at Oaklawn, and if you want to get involved in the pick five, you got to negotiate a maiden 10 in the fifth to start it out. How about some push for Saturday before we get some NFL action in?
Yeah, I was with you in terms of the card. You know, early tomorrow, not too many things I'm looking at. I thought the headliner of the day is the fifth season, as you mentioned, and the return of Concert Tour, who we haven't seen in a while. You know, we haven't seen since the Preakness, obviously. Now, for those that weren't informed on it, Brad Cox now has the Gary and Mary West colt, the son of Street Sense, who won the Rebel over this racetrack impressively and then disappointed at 1-5 in the Arkansas Derby. But, you know, everything I've heard, this horse has been training incredibly well for Cox, been down at Fairgrounds, was entered in a race there but didn't go in it, and now ships in for this. And I think they have you know, probably their eyes on some big things here at Oakland, and this is just a starting point, but the blinkers come off. I think if he runs to the way they expect him to be, he's going to be tough to beat. But it's a pretty good group in there with Necker Island stretching out. You've got Silver Prospector returning, Long Range Toddy, Thomas Shelby. So I am going to end up keying Concert Tour because I don't think if it's him, I mean, it's not him. I think it could be anyone. I know it's not a very exciting pick. Nothing I'm going to rush to the windows to bet to win or anything. But the race before, it's pretty interesting, Steve. It's a 3-year-old maiden special weight at a mile, another wide open maiden race in here. And I'm going to, you know, key in on two horses. Number one, Fast Lane, is a horse that I liked last time and disappointed me pretty big time on November 19th. At Churchill after getting bet down significantly, but now gets blinkers and LASIK and two turns. He's kind of looked like a horse that's kind of gotten lost a little bit out there, so I think the blinkers help. The pedigree screams two turns to me, so hopefully Rosario can get a little bit more forward position than last time when he was from the far outside and broke outward and was trailing throughout much of that race before making a little bit of a move. And then number 10, Blue Norther, I thought was the other one I'm going to use. Raced just once, 6 furlongs over the sloppy going at Churchill back on November 25th, but made a significant middle move in there, picking things up quite a bit on the turn before tiring. And now it's been freshened up for Brad Cox. And I think, you know, if the two turns isn't an issue, I'm expecting a pretty big move forward. So I'm 110 in there with a lean towards the one.
Rated R Superstar. I have not had a chance to really delve. I got to look.
Teeth first, yeah. Right? Mouth first.
Gonna have to. Got that Kapuna ran a nice.
That ran very well last time. Yeah. Gate issues are a little bit concerning.
All right.
Short price.
I haven't. The Saturday stuff, I'm behind, so I'm going to rely on you. Anything else for tomorrow at Oakland?
Not really, you know.
All
not
right.
A card I'm overly excited to wager on. Yeah, some opportunities in there. I think there's some chances to beat some favorites, but who you can beat them with, I'm not overly excited. You can always find my selections, lukewarm or not, on Twin Spires, under the expert picks videos on the website. So they'll be up on there soon for Saturday.
Very good. Let's talk NFL and the Saturday game. We got what, Raiders Bengals first?
Raiders Bengals first, and then the rubber match between Patriots and Bills. Don't really have a strong opinion in the latter game. I think the first game is going to be pretty interesting. It's actually my play of the week in terms of wagering. The Raiders have a tough task bouncing back from that crazy game on Sunday night. Traveling east, you know, they got the first game. They played the last game of the regular season. The Bengals are kind of all the hype right now with the young kids. Burrow leading the charge with Chase and Higgins. But I think two coaches coaching in the playoffs for the first time, and this game's going to come down to whether the Bengals can block the Raiders. You know, if you watch that Charger-Raider game, you know Max Crosby and Ndakwe are real forces on that front line and on the defensive line for the Raiders. The Bengals, their biggest concern is their offensive line. I think this game is going to be a little more low-scoring than people might expect it to be. With conservative game plans out of the chute for both these teams and, you know, maybe a game in the mid-40s. So I'm going to play under in the first half and under in the total in this game. I know it's not exciting to come out with an under in a playoff game. People want to see points, but I'll hope for a little more low scoring than others.
I'm looking at some of the odds and various props. 5.5 right now, right? Bengals giving 5.5.
Yeah, bounced around. It's bounced around a little bit. It was 6. I think I saw it get down to 5 on TwinSpire Sportsbook, and I think it's back to 5.5. But yeah, it's tough to really like the Raiders in this spot. But you know, we see it so often. Some examples, the Giants way back when they won as a 6 seed. Defensive line can carry teams in the playoffs, and that's what the Raiders need to bank on here. And if you're backing the under like I am, that's what you need to count on as well.
Raiders 0-5 against the spread in their last 5 meetings with Cincinnati. Bengals are 6-2 against the spread in their last 8 games following a straight-up loss. There are a couple of little things, and 49 is the over-under. So you're projecting mid-40s, and there's your under explanation. You got a root interest, Pats Bills, if no action?
It's tough, you know. I mean, I guess I lean toward rooting for the Bills and their fan base that needs to win more. You know, nothing against I'm not one of the Patriot hating crews. You know, I've enjoyed watching.
Why not? It's easy.
Watching.
It's fun. Come on.
So much respect for what's gone on there over the years, but yeah. I mean, I guess you know the Bills. They won the division. You know, they've done a lot what they're supposed to, but they're not as good as they were towards the end of last year. So I'm kind of looking forward just to seeing how they respond. I mean, it's been pretty much since they lost to the Chiefs last year, they've been waiting for the playoffs, you know. So maybe they'll turn things around. Josh Allen, when he's on his game, he's as fun and good as anybody to watch. But pretty neutral in there.
All right. How about Sunday? And starts with my Birds down in Tampa.
Yeah, I mean, the weather might be an issue, which is surprising. Yep. There. It looks like winds and whatnot, which I think helps the Eagles because, you know, as you well know, and they haven't faced too many high-powered aerial attacks other than last week, which doesn't really count with their, you know, backups and third stringers on the field. But when they have taken on the best quarterbacks and passing games in the league, they really struggled. And, you know, I kind of think that's the key here. Can they figure out a way to stop Brady, obviously, without got Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown, which he had last year. I don't think the Bucs are near where they were last year, but counting out Brady is a move I've made a couple times. It's a poor decision. But I think if the weather doesn't get in the way, this is a game that should go over the total. However, a lot of sharp money has come in on the total. I mean, it was 49 or 50. It's down to 45.5 right now.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think the Eagles are going to find a way to score. You know, we've seen it in a number of games, especially when they fall behind. I mean, Jalen Hurts really, you know, is a good quarterback if you need, you know, garbage time points. And how are you feeling about it? I don't have a strong opinion. I mean, playing against Brady seems, you know, unwise, but I'm not sold that the Bucs are as good as they were. Do you have any confidence?
I've got a ton of confidence. They're playing with house money. You had tons of people who never expected any kind of season from them at all, let alone a playoff run. 2-5. Everybody had them buried. Everybody had Sirianni fired. And they're ready to turn it over to any scrap heap quarterback. The fans are a little over the top. But I was confident from the start of the season with this team. And people that are talking about the game they played earlier in the season, Eagles were missing significant parts for that game, and including Lane Johnson. I think certainly that eight and a half for those that are. That are playing that way, I think is nice, but I think they win straight out.
Wow, love it. Yeah, that game is meaningless to me. Not only were the things that you mentioned, but it was a Thursday night game, which in my opinion, can always be worthy of kind of tossing. Not always, but very little time to prepare, which to me can often hurt the underdog. And it was a weird game. The Bucs jumped out. They did everything right. They looked like they were going to rout them. And then the Eagles kind of settled in a little bit. I'm not willing to really use that game as much of a barometer for how this one is going to go. But, excited for all my Eagle friend fans, including yourself.
I appreciate it. What about the late games? You got the Niners in Dallas and Steelers in visiting Kansas City.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I would never be willing to take the points in the late game with the Steelers. I can't believe they made the playoffs. Credit to Mike Tomlin and the gritty, gutsy, winning ugly performances they were able to put forth towards the end of the year. But when they played Kansas City a couple weeks back at Arrowhead, it was completely non-competitive, and I see that happening again. I don't think Travis Kelce even played in that game. I just don't see how, the Steelers they don't have much of a downfield passing game. Their offensive line's not very good, and the Chiefs appear to be clicking. I know their defense didn't play well the last couple of weeks, but I think this is a get-right spot. Don't love laying 12.5 points, so I won't, but I would never be willing to take the Steelers. But the Niners-Cowboys is the game of the weekend for me in terms of just pure entertainment. The Niners coming through last week with that come-from-behind win. Dallas been a little bit up and down of late, but tons of star power. I think we get a lot of points in this one. I was disappointed that these two teams matched up and the Cardinals and Rams matched up because I wanted to fade the Cardinals and Rams and get involved with the Niners and Cowboys. But that's the way it turned out. I lean taking the points, the 3.5 with the Niners, but the Cowboys' upside is pretty high if they can, get everything to click at the right time. So I'm not overly excited about jumping in on the Niners, even though I think they're probably the right side. They're playing their best football at the right time.
And finally, Cards-Rams.
Yeah, no real opinion in this one. As I mentioned, they're two teams that I think have played better at other times during the year. I don't really trust the way either offense is playing. Matthew Stafford, making big mistakes at the wrong time, but highly capable of making some big plays with Cooper Kupp. And the Cardinals without DeAndre Hopkins just haven't been the same offense. Kyler Murray's had great moments, looked like the MVP at the beginning part of the year. But lane four, I would lean towards taking the points because I lack an opinion, but nothing that I'm getting involved in.
Very good. Scott Shapiro, everybody. And Shap, good luck this weekend, and we'll be into divisional next week, and we got a big weekend coming up at Fairgrounds next week, and I appreciate the opinions, and good luck.
Hope the mouth is feeling better, and yeah, it should be a fun weekend. Really looking forward to it, and we'll reconvene next week.
Scott Shapiro, everybody, and some good ideas today at Oaklawn and for the football action. And I mentioned Fairgrounds. Well, next week we'll talk seriously about the LeCompte card with Marcus Hirsch. But I reached out to Marcus because he had some interesting action on game plan for this weekend. Marcus Hirsch, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And Marcus, kind of an eclectic, another eclectic weekend as we, right, we wade into serious action next week. So I thought, you know, you opened my eyes. I'd forgotten about Tampa. And I saw that you had Gasparilla interests and that fifth season. We just talked concert tour and his return on the hands of Brad Cox. Plus, yeah, you looked at the Cal Cup Oaks. Some thoughts.
What's the concert tour scuttlebutt?
I know that Scott just said, you know, word is that he's trained well, but I thought there are some serious hard hitters that he's running into. I'm not, I'm not leaning heavily in his direction tomorrow.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to go forward or take back a little?
It's hard to know it's hard to know that. It's a good question.
Right.
Here, let me turn to my...
Thomas Shelby and the Rays, he's going to lead,
yep.
I'm sure.
Exactly.
And you got Mucho on the far outside, ridden by Florent Giroux, just mentioning that, who's not riding concert tour for Cox, who's this guy. He's on that speed horse, sprinter, stretching out. You'd think he has to go, too. There is a chance of rain. Good chance of rain. Could be wet again. Concert Tour, he was entered in the Woodchopper. I'm sure you remember. That's a three-year-old only grass race at Fairgrounds. He was entered only to run if the race came off, which it did not. I don't know. I think it'll be... I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if he wins. I mean, I'm going to be surprised if he errs, but I don't even know how good he is. I mean... The eternal question, Steve, who'd he beat? Mr. Impossible and Hozier and Cato. I mean, none of his form is looking too good to me, really. I don't even know if he's, like, a really good horse. He looks like he could be okay, but I don't... Like, he's just going to get hammered. Rosario's coming in to ride. I mentioned in the weekend game plan. I mean, I wish I could come up with a new title for this weekly feature. I hate that. But just saying it sounds bad. Anodyne. But the old column was called Weekend Warrior, which I didn't ever like because it made it seem like, you know, like the person doing the column was just a Weekend Warrior. And like, why do you want to listen to the Weekend? I think it was meant to denote like it's for the Weekend Warrior if you just want to dive in. And I didn't like that either. Anyway, Silver Prospector, I noticed him working fast at Fairgrounds a while ago, and I thought he'd run in this spot, and he confirmed it when I texted him the other day. But I don't think he's that. I could be wrong. I don't think a mile is really necessarily him. I don't think he's that well met for a semi, although he has run well fresh. But I ended up jumping on Old Snapper Sinclair here. The more I looked at the whole setup. The more I thought, he's like his form is really not bad.
No,
I'm tossing out the Turfway race. It's first time on a synthetic track. He just clearly didn't like it. And what was he going to do with Life is Good in the Dirt Mile? And he got off badly anyway. You go back one race, he's second to Lieutenant Dan. That's a good piece of form. Granted, it's a turf sprint, but this horse go way back to like early in his career. He likes Oaklawn, and if it rains, he likes it wet at Oaklawn.
True.
I think he's going to get a sneaky good trip right behind. I think it'll be higher. I don't agree with the line here. I criticized the line in last week's stakes. I thought Coach was set too low. That ended up being pretty accurate. I was wrong on that one. I think Thomas Shelby's going to be lower than 5-1. I don't think Mucho is 7-2 necessarily. But I do think that Concert Tour is going to get hammered way below 5-2.
Agree on all fronts. I respect there's two veteran types involved here that we haven't really discussed. You mentioned the stretch out of Mucho. Well, Necker Island going back out to a mile.
That's another line I didn't agree with at all. I mean, how is that horse going to be? What, 4-1?
9-2.
I think he's more like a 12-1 shot.
Hartman, I have to look 2-3 times at anything Hartman produces. And the other horse that I thought deserved a mention, at least.
Yeah. Joe, you like Necker Island? Because I don't like him at all.
I respect Hartman tremendously, and it seems to me that the even with those two wins at Churchill this past fall, it that's not necessarily him. I think getting back out
on the cutback, but if so is coming back out again, maybe. I mean, yeah. I can't see it with him, but I mean, you're getting more than listed odds, so he could be worth play. And I hear you. He's 2-2 in wet tracks as well, worth mentioning with the rainy forecast.
And also has gotten over at Oakland. Okay. Allowance going back to earlier in the year. And the other horse that deserves a mention is Rated R Superstar. He's never won at a mile, but might be short for him, but
I mean,
I don't know.
He had a good year. He made $330,000 as an 8-year-old. That's pretty impressive.
Well, and another horse that, he's got 8 exacta finishes at Oaklawn and 18 starts, and everybody brings him back, from McPeak to Contreras and now Villafranco, bring him back to Oaklawn. I mean, he did win that Governor's Cup at Remington 3-4 months ago, so... At the end of the summer.
Yeah, got a pretty good setup there. Another one that would surprise me if he's able to crack the top two.
I hear you. I just it's a nice group. It's an interesting, it's a fun, interesting group together.
I thought it was an easy race for me to use because I felt the same way. Looking forward to seeing how that all shakes out.
Let me reach for Oldsmar, and Tampa has got what they're terming the Skyway Festival, and the 3-year-olds, the Pasco, right? The Pasco and the Gasparilla, and then the Wayward Lass for the fillies and mares going long on the main.
Mm-hmm.
You tab the Gasparilla as a spot.
Tell me, who are the top 5 3-year-old fillies dirt route right now? No, I obviously that's a tough question to answer off the cuff. But really, that division is looking for something.
Outside of Echo Zulu is right. It's funny, Marcus, is that after a number of seasons where we turned the corner from December to January, 2-year-olds becoming 3, there was a period where the fillies were distinctly ahead of the boys. And then last year and this year, the boys have been much more progressive early and precocious. I can't imagine that there's any, rhyme or reason to that.
Yeah, agreed. Anyway, I didn't see much in the Pasco. I have the 2-1 favorite in the Gasparilla outfox, but I think she could be longer than that. Strategic Bird was even money winning the Sandpiper over, and the horse that was second by Neck in this race too had 7 lengths on third. I don't think Divine Charge is going to get that much, but I think Strategic Bird is going to. And then you've got the Todd Pletcher is running Goddess of Fire, who she doesn't look like anything is special, but she's got stakes for him. And Pletcher at Tampa, they always take some action. Anyway, Out front, did I mean? I remembered. I thought she. I was impressed with her Susan's girl because it's tough to go from Saratoga to Gulfstream in August. Much different kind of everything. And granted, she was, you know, 7-5 there for a reason in the Sire Stakes, but I thought she ran really well. I actually thought she showed some gears in her third behind the aforementioned Echo Zulu, a typical Mont debuter with talent who isn't cranked in any way, but you can see the flashes if you watch during the race. And I don't know, I mean, she might have won despite the two turns rather than because, which maybe she's fine at two turns in the rich Sires race, but boy, a $360,000 Valiant Minister, she must have really caught the eye at the sale. I think she's well prepped, well meant at the right trip, and I'm hoping for 5-2 or higher.
Any interest in the pair coming out of that allowance race? I always like to focus in on the horses that have run at Tampa.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, Maria Bowersock may have won this race 3 or 4 years ago, either this or the Pasco. So she knows what, you know, is going to be competitive here. And that Platinum Gem and Eros Girl are well within range of these Invaders.
Okay. All right. I mean, you're going to get paid, that's for sure.
Look at, you know, I hadn't even noticed this until now. Bowersox 6-17 at the meet.
Yeah, I can't, sadly, and this is something you might want to address immediately. There does not appear to be a Wikipedia page for the Gasparilla Stakes.
That's out. That can't be the case. That's outrageous.
I'm afraid so. I can't give you any stakes histories. I do not have my Tampa media guide handy. You might or might not be right about that.
She had a horse. I think it might have been a boy that you know tried to shoulder its way into the, you know, the 3-year-old sequence. I mean, she's very capable, and you get Pablo Morales, who's winning races hand over fist.
Okay.
There's a lot to like. All right, let's swing out to California from Tampa. And Jay Bribman, who's going to join us momentarily, he's looked at the Derby, I know. He did the advance, Marcus. What do you make of the Oaks field?
Well, the Derby I didn't like, but I did consider even other horses besides the one I picked. Speaking of 9-year-olds, Camino del Paraíso in the Turf Classic, I think has a decent chance. And then I also thought Galore would win the Filly and Mare Turf Sprint. I do not agree with that line. She's one second choice. I think she's going to be solidly favored as the lone speed, which is why I kind of dodged a little. But then Vivacious Vanessa really caught my eye in the California Cup. Oh, her debut at Del Mar, a two-turn mile, was excellent, even better than it looks on paper. She not only came from way back, granted it was a pretty good pace she had to run into, but she had to wait twice for room. There was no spot at the half-mile pole, and then again right around the 3-furlong, she had to swerve between horses. I think she was 23:40 for the final quarter mile, which is darn good for a 2-year-old going two turns first out at that time of year. And they cut her back to 7/8 on dirt because there was a nice race for it. She just doesn't look like a dirt horse at all. She's got a great pattern, obviously intended for this spot for quite a while, and I think that she doesn't have to fall out the back door the way she did first time. She's 4-1 on the line. She's the kind of horse that I think it's going to take. She might end up being over a bet. I didn't think so because the field's so deep, but I've seen her get some mentions. I know that Brad Free, you know, featured her prominently in his race preview for Daily Racing Form. Yeah, hoping for a decent price there because I really like that filly, Gary Mandela.
Vivacious Vanessa, the 3-4-1 in the nightcap, the Cal Cup Oaks, turf mile for the 3-year-old Cal Phillies, and nice field. And I'm glad you touched on some of the other spots, and we'll get an opinion
good
from
card.
Jay. On
I like Saturday. That card. That's a nice standing card. I'm sure Jay knows it inside and out, and we'll have all kinds of nuggets.
Well, he will join us after this. And Marcus, as we wrap, I did mention when I told people you were going to visit, you did yesterday circulate the news about Mystic Guide, and this didn't sound great.
Well, yeah, I don't think he has a serious injury, but I... You know, he's already coming back from a knee chip surgery, and it's not, I don't think it's, I know it's not the same thing flaring up, but I don't know. It's all, it sounds like everything's up in the air. When it sounded like things were going good in the fall, you know, when he got started, worked, and I was really hoping to see him. You know, if things went well, you know, he was going to be able to just do what he did last year, have a race in February and then go back to Dubai, but obviously, that's off the table now, and we'll see if he ends up coming back. I hope he does. He was a later developer anyway, and had every right to be a really good 5-year-old.
All right. Well, we'll keep tabs, and we'll look forward to seeing Mike Stidham when we get down to Fairgrounds for Risen Star Week, and we look forward to talking to you next Friday ahead of La Comp Day.
Yes, I'll be there.
Oh, good.
Going down Tuesday. They draw all those races tomorrow. Love getting an early look at
yes.
things on the small day six card. So we'll see what happens.
DRF Hirsch, everybody. Marcus Hirsch and the soon-to-be renamed Game Plan.
I can't think of another name.
How about Action Plan? Action Plan.
Action.
Right?
It's sounds like... It could be like a life insurance pitch or something.
Marcus's first career.
All right,
thanks, Marcus. I really appreciate it. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Let's take a break. We're 5 minutes into hour two. We'll come back and be joined by DRF Privman. Jay joins us. He got the troika of DRF correspondents today. Marcus and Jay, and then later Mike Welch. Marty McGee had a computer emergency. That's why he's not on today. So we'll get to Marty next week. Back after this, Jay Pridman joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay.